Well, can't thank you enough for being here. It's a huge blessing and an honor that you would take a whole day and spend it here with us. I've been to a lot of conferences, and one of the things that I hear at conferences sometimes is, you know, sometimes they'll ask the question, or not maybe ask a question, maybe even make a statement. You know, they'll say something like, maybe your church has outgrown your ability to lead it. Or maybe you've reached your limit, you know, when it comes to your ability to lead your ministry or take your church to the next level or whatever. And sometimes I hear questions like that in a conference, and I think to myself, that's just a dumb thing to say. It's a dumb thing to say. That's what I think anyway. And maybe it's not, I don't know, but it's dumb from the standpoint of, I think it causes doubt and fear into the mind and the heart of a leader. And, you know, is it possible for a leader to reach a plateau? Absolutely it is, 100%. But I can guarantee you it's not because of God. You know, it's not because of him. There's no limits with him. There's literally no limit to what God can do through you in your life. But it's, you know, because of us. And, you know, there are obviously things that pop up into our life at times that can cause those limits. So there's no limits with him, just with us. I'm the perfect example of how God can use anybody. I'm absolutely the perfect example. And I truly believe this, and I've always said it, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. But one thing that I've learned over the years is that God can use a dull knife. God can use something that's dull, you know, and because God can do anything with anybody, anytime, anywhere. And, you know, there are times that even a dull knife can get caught up in pride a little bit. You know, I remember one time I was up in Massachusetts, and I'm standing on the floor doing a come forward invitation, because that's all we did. We did come forward invitations. And this guy came out of the back row, walked down the middle aisle, because that's what we had, the center aisle. And I knew the guy because I was friends with him. And he came down right to me, and I said, "What's up, man? What's going on?" He goes, "I feel like God is calling me to go into the ministry." And I remember, right as soon as he said it, I had this thought in the back of my mind that was like, well, okay, yeah, I'm an influence. I'm an influence on you. And literally, that's what I was thinking. It's awful. But I thought it. It just popped in there. Like the Stay Puft Marshmallow guy just popped in there, the thought. You know this movie. But so it just popped into my brain. Literally, after I thought that thought, he looked at me and he said these words. He said, "I thought if you could do it, I could easily do it." Literally, that's what he said to me. So, I mean, the bottom line is God can use anybody, you know, to do anything. And I think there's, you know, there's a verse that's always kind of rocked me over in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verses 7 and 8. And, you know, I think about David, and I'm the type of guy, I read about David and I have tears pouring down my face every time I read about the guy. He's ridiculous. Everything that he did was amazing. His faith was off the charts. His loyalty to a man that was trying to kill him on a regular basis. Saul's trying to do anything he can to kill him. And then other people are talking bad about Saul. And David is saying, "Shut your mouth. Do not talk about God's anointed that way." And I lose it just because of the loyalty that he had for Saul. And yet David went through some really tough times. You know, I think about the fact that David killed Goliath, that David literally conquered the Philistines, the Moabites, the Edomites, the Amalekites, the Ammonites, the Jebusites. He had incredible power, incredible wealth, incredible influence. And then there's this verse that you read in 2 Samuel chapter 12 and verses 7 and 8. In verse 7, you know, David had sinned with Bathsheba and murdered Uriah, and God raised up Nathan to have a conversation with him. The other day I was reading it, and I thought to myself, wow, God was the one that came up with the story for Nathan to tell David. Tell him about this guy that has a sheep, and this other guy's rich, and he's got flocks and flocks of sheep. But God came up with that story. It's amazing. And so Nathan tells him the story. David freaks out, and basically says, "He'll pay." Ah! He's freaking out. And that's when Nathan looks at him and points his finger at him. He says, "I'm talking about you. I'm talking about you." You know, and wow, it's a powerful verse of scripture when he has that confrontation with him. But what gets me is what he says next. He says that all the things that God has done for you, all that he's done for you. He says, I anointed you king of Israel. You know, I saved you from the power of Saul. I gave you your master's house. I gave you his wives. I gave you the kingdoms of Israel and Judah. And this is what got me. And if it had not been enough, I would have given you much, much more. That's amazing to me. That tells me that with God, there is no ceiling. You look at David's life. He's the greatest king that Israel ever had. He had everything. He had power. He had riches. He had wisdom. He had the hand of God on his life. He literally had everything. And God told David, I would have done so much more with you. You know, so many times in our ministry, and this is just popping into my head, but so many times in our ministry, we think, well, there's really nothing else I can do. I don't have any more ability. You know, maybe I have taken this church to the as far as I can take it or whatever. Listen, please understand that God can do anything with you. There is no limitations with the God of the universe and the hand that he's put on you. And I think there are ways that we can keep that in mind, especially when it comes to having things in our own life pop into our lives that cause a ceiling or a limitation in our life, whatever it may be. I would say, number one, just keep trusting in him. Keep trusting him, keep trusting him, keep trusting him. When things in life don't make sense, trust him. When you face challenges that you are literally scared to death about, trust him anyway. Trust him through all of it. To me, the opposite of trusting him in him is fear and disobedience. And if there's anything that's going to cause a limit to your leadership, it's going to be fear and disobedience. You know, because that's definitely going to create a ceiling for sure in, you know, in our ministries. You know, when it comes to fear, a lot of times what happens is we become so afraid of things that we won't take any risks. We won't take a step of faith when it comes to our ministries. We'll be like, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to try that. It's too risky. It's too this, that, or the other. We're not going to do it. I can tell you this. Our church has been around for 18 years. We started in 2003. And what I've learned is this. Every single solitary time our church has taken a step of faith, God has blessed in incredible ways. Every time we took a step of faith. And it was risky. And there, we were scared, you know, but we took a step of faith and God showed up in incredible ways and gave us an increase that we couldn't even imagine because that's what he does. I remember one year we did a series on faith. I don't even remember the name of the series. It wasn't 40 days of faith, but it was something else. Daring faith. It was daring faith. I still to this day hear people come. This was years ago at Battlefield High School. I still to this day have people come up to me and saying, man, in daring faith, we made a decision to do this. In daring faith, we stepped out by faith and did this. I'm telling you right now, God blesses faith. God is pleased with faith. Take a step of faith. You literally have nothing to fear. The God of the universe has his hand on you. His hand of power is upon you. So take a step of faith. It took faith for us to start the church. I got a phone call from Bob Surface, friend of ours. I'm from Fairfax, but at the time we were up pastoring in Massachusetts. And he said this, and I kind of imitate him a little bit. He goes, Barry, I called you to turn your world upside down today. So literally what he said to me. I called you to turn your world upside down today. He had dinner with my parents the night before and asked them, do you think it's a good idea if I call Barry to come back home and with his wife and kids, their family, and start a church? They said, yeah, good idea. Do it. So he called. And 2 months later, and a whole lot of stress later, because I didn't want to quit on Massachusetts, you know, we decided to come back and plant Park Valley Church. Well, we had 20 people meeting in an asphalt company training room. But that was a step of faith. And you know what God did? He began to bless. And he began to bring people to the ministry. We weren't even inviting people because we thought it was weird and creepy to have a church in an asphalt training room. We weren't even inviting them. You know, and we were like, they even gave me an office at the asphalt company. So like during the day, during the week, a lady would come into my office and she would say, found this diaper bag on my desk. Is this yours? Yeah. We were changing babies on your desk. Sorry about that. We sanitized. Everything's cool, you know, or whatever. But literally, slowly but surely, God just began to bless. And we took another step of faith and moved into Alvey Elementary School. And God began to bless. And people began to come, and we were doing two services and three services. First, we had the wall, then we moved the wall, then we were doing two services without the wall, and it was just amazing, literally every single time. Then from there, we decided that we would build a building, and we were able to buy, we didn't build this building, but we built that building over there. We bought 10 acres of land, and we ended up buying another piece over there, so we had 27 total acres. And we built the first building, but that was a big step of faith because the land was over $1 million, about $1.4 million. And the building, by the time we got into the building, we were $7 million in debt in our first building. And that took a lot of faith to do that. You know, for somebody to come up to you, to me and say, hey, you got a $32,000 a month mortgage payment. I would be like, are you kidding me? There ain't no way we doing that. But you know what? God blessed. And when we moved into that building, we found out that it wasn't adequate because we were doing four services in a row, four consecutive services. And the only way we could do it is the first service we called our express service. I mean, we were coming up with weird ideas, you know. And finally, after people were getting stuck in mud and people were filling out comment cards saying, we really love the church, but it's just a little busy. We were getting comment cards like that. I said, you know what? Let's go to the school. It took faith to move out of a building, a perfectly brand new building, and move over to the high school. But what we did was, is we ended up going from 500 seats to over 800 seats, close to 900 seats, 100 or 200 parking spaces to 1,000 parking spaces. And basically everybody was like, yeah, sounds good. Let's do it. And that's exactly what he did. And the Lord blessed again, and we grew then. And then we were able to build this building. And then we moved into this building, God blessed again. But when we built this building, we took our resources down to almost zero, almost nothing. And I'm the type of person that likes to have a nice little rainy day account, you know, because I want to be able to pay people, and I want to be able to make sure that we're able to function as a ministry. But we literally went down to about zero when it comes to that. But it's amazing how the Lord worked because we paid off the land the moment we moved into that building. The land was paid. When we moved into this building, the first day we moved into this building, that building was paid. It was amazing how God just provided every single step of the way. And then we have a hefty mortgage here, you know, but again, God is providing. If I could share what he's doing with right now, financially, the Lord has blessed in so many ways. All I'm saying is this, faith pleases him. Don't be afraid to trust him. Don't be afraid to take a risk. Don't be afraid to step out by faith. Don't be afraid to expect that God is, it's like I heard a pastor say one time, you know, God plants all these visions and dreams in our hearts to do something for ministry. And then all of a sudden, COVID comes out of nowhere. So what do? We get into our meetings and we say, we got to redirect everything. We got to change this, change that, whatever. This pastor got up and said, the same God that gave you that vision and that dream to do something in your ministry, did he know that COVID was coming? And I was just sitting there in the pew going, he knew. And then I left that place thinking, what are we backing down for? We're not backing down. We're not taking any steps back. We're moving forward. We serve the God of the universe. He's in control. This is his church. I'm sorry I'm getting animated, but the bottom line is there is no reason to fear, you know, and I think we absolutely need to make wise decisions for sure, but trust him, trust him, trust him. Out of the 785,137 words in the Bible, he's trying to teach us two. Trust me. Every single story, every single verse, every single principle that he's bringing through in his word is basically teaching us that he is trustworthy, that he will never let us down, and that he is always with us no matter what. The second thing is this, stay disciplined. Stay disciplined in your life. You know, continue learning. Stay disciplined when it comes to your health. Here's the thing, if me hitting a ceiling If I simply am hitting a ceiling because I don't have the energy anymore to do ministry, then I probably ought to look at my health. And I probably ought to think, it's not about me walking around in beautiful health so everybody can say, wow, you're in great shape. No, it's so that I can have maybe a few more days to serve the Lord, you know, and to be able to have the strength to be able to serve Him, because that runs out quickly. And so I think we need to stay disciplined. And, you know, all I'm saying is this: you are the man or woman that God has chosen for the ministry that you have. You're the man or woman that God has placed His hand upon. And there are people that may not like that. There are people that may think, oh, I can do that better or whatever. But it doesn't change the fact that you are in the calling that God has placed you. When I was in Massachusetts, it was the first ministry that I had ever been a senior pastor of. I've never done it before. Thank God He gave me a deacon by the name of Tony Ogden, who now long since has gone to heaven because he died of esophageal cancer, of all things. But he died of cancer. But while I was in that church, I did not know what I was doing. I was faking it, you know, the best I could. I mean, I had been in church for sure, so I was going through the motions of what I knew to do. But this guy was teaching me incredible things. And I was basically sitting at this guy's feet because he had so much wisdom. That was the guy, I don't know if you remember, I guess this morning I talked about the guy that knelt down and looked at my kids in the eyes and said, thank you for giving us your dad. We love you. I mean, this was this kind of guy. He was amazing. If I was in a prayer meeting on a Wednesday night, we had prayer meeting on Wednesday night, did our prayer meeting, I would always go, I want to pray with a couple of the deacons. I'll close. You know, all like that. He would look at me and say, I'm not praying with you. I'd say, what do you mean not praying with me? You're a deacon. Let's pray. He goes, no, you see that guy over there? He doesn't even know how to pray. It's his first time. Go pray with him. I was like, dude, you are so flipping smart. And he said, oh, and you always close in prayer? He says, stop closing in prayer. Lead in prayer. You be the first to pray. Because when you pray with him, what you're doing is teaching him how to pray when you pray first. I was just going, you're like Yoda, man. You're Yoda. I just do whatever you tell me to do. You know, but it was just, it was amazing. So, but I'm just saying there were times I had to face a lot of fears, you know, because I had never done it before. And so what I did was, is I found myself saying out loud to myself before I walked into a meeting or before I even walked into the church, I would say things like this: I'm the pastor of this church and I'm going to pastor it. Literally, that's what I would say out loud. I'm the pastor of this church and I'm going to pastor it. Okay? Capiche? You got a problem with that? Now, I wasn't saying that to anybody. I was just saying it like in the mirror, or I was saying it to myself. But honestly, there were times I felt so many fears, you know, and I had to kind of say that out loud to myself to basically get through. And the bottom line is there's always going to be opposition. There's always going to be people that are convinced they can do it better. But God has His hand on you. And God, you know, is with you. And God has chosen you for the ministry that you're in. So what do? Thank Him for the opportunity and do the ministry. Move forward with confidence, you know, and do what it is that God's called you to do, and do it unapologetically, you know. And I think about, we've been talking a little bit about, I hit on Ruth the other day. We did a series on whatever it was. I don't even remember what it was. It was, I guess, Repurposed. And it was the closing message for Repurposed. And we talked about Ruth, or at least the last message I did. And, you know, how Elimelech basically decides that he's going to leave Bethlehem, which the name of Bethlehem means house of bread. And the reason he's leaving it is because there's a famine. So the irony there is he's leaving the house of bread in search of bread. And what I told everybody was this: you're surrounded by God's blessing. You're surrounded by so many blessings. But what we do is we pick up and leave the blessing that God has given us in search of another blessing. And God is saying, you're already blessed. You've been given an amazing ministry. You've been given an amazing job, an amazing task. Take the job that I've given you. Understand that my hand is upon you. Move forward and trust in me. Stay disciplined, you know, in your life, and, you know, let's do kingdom work. The last thing is this: stay committed to the gospel. Stay committed to the gospel. I know that's a preachy thing to say. You know, it's so easy to say certain things and then not explain them. But what I mean by that is, you know, one of the things that we do at Park Valley is everything that we do revolves around the gospel of Jesus Christ. Everything that we do. Because, and this sounds in your face, I'm not trying to be in your face, but if all you do is feed people and clothe people, then really what you end up doing is sending well-fed and well-dressed people to hell if you don't give them Christ. And I don't mind saying that to our church. I say that to our church on occasion. And you know what I have found? You know, I used to think people thought, you know, because we always give people a chance. We give the gospel at the end of the service every single time. And we give people a chance to pray and accept Christ at every single service. And I used to think people probably think it's stupid or, you know, whatever. But then I would get, you know, people talking to me in the lobby saying, thank you so much for doing that. Thank you so much for giving people a chance to accept Christ. And what I started finding out was it was one of the main reasons why people were inviting people to church. Because they realized, I had a guy come to me one time, his name Justin Exner. He was the first time visitor that we ever had at Park Valley Church. Bob Surface, who owns Superior Paving, took a sign, walked down to the corner, stuck it out on the corner, and Justin Exner pulled in, just moved here from Ohio. And he said, you guys got a church here? He goes, yeah, our pastor's going to be here next week. But he was picking the sign up, so they were done with the service, and I wasn't even there. And he said, yeah, well, we'd like to check you out next weekend. So he came. They never stopped coming. He's been a trustee in our church. His family has been an absolute amazing blessing to Park Valley Church in ways you wouldn't even imagine. But he told me a story one time. He had a conflict with a guy at work, worked for United Airlines, had like 700 people under his leadership, and had a conflict with a guy. And he felt led of God because of a message or whatever. He walked up to him and said, I want to invite you to my church. And he thought for sure he would say no. And the guy said, yes. So he ended up bringing him to church. What he didn't realize was that this guy was struggling with full-blown AIDS. Full-blown AIDS. So here he is, brings him to church. He comes to one service. I preached the gospel at the end. I gave everyone a chance to accept Christ. Justin's doing the holy peep like this. You know the holy peep? And I said, if you just accepted Christ, I want you to raise your hand. The guy that he brought to church went like this, raised his hand up. Said he accepted Christ. It's the last time he was ever at Park Valley Church. 2 weeks later, he was in heaven. And Justin Exner has said to me over and over again, he said, I knew if I could get him here one time. If I could get him here one time, I knew that he would accept, or no, he didn't know he would accept Christ, but he knew it at least he would have an opportunity to. And so we had a lady come to our church, Gwendon, last name was Gwendon. Was it Ashley? Whitten. So she gets invited to Park Valley Church. She comes and she sits at Battlefield High School. We give the gospel at the end. The Lord touches her heart. She goes back to the prayer tent. We set a prayer tent up inside, which is crazy. But it's a focal point, right? So she goes over to the prayer tent and she says, I want to accept Christ. She meets Mark Brady. Mark Brady leads her to Christ. She leaves Park Valley Church. And she was in the news on her first call as a Prince William County police officer. She was shot and killed. Tell me that's not a God thing. That was a God thing. And I tell you, I believe with all my heart that God blesses a church that is going to be faithful to the gospel. Be faithful to the gospel. What I typically do at the end is I just say, look, everyone craves God. Everyone does. And you may be looking at me right now saying, I don't crave him. I don't even believe in him. So there. And I look at him and go, oh, you crave him. You crave him big time. You know why I know that? Because you're going after stuff. And stuff never satisfies. You get the bigger house, it comes with a bigger payment. You get the nice car, it loses the new car smell as soon as you have petrified French fries all over it, like everyone else. You get the dream job. What do? Rot on 66. And you get stressed out beyond belief. Absolutely, positively. All I'm saying is there's a verse in Romans that says, whoever puts their faith in God will not be disappointed. You've always wanted Him. You've always craved Him. The problem is there's a separation there. Sin offends God. He's crazy about you. He loves you from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. Problem is you were born a sinner. And the reason I know that is because I have four sons and they're all expert sinners from birth. Never had to teach one of them how to sin ever. All right, buddy, let's try lying again. You stink at it. Try it again. Never had to teach him how to lie. Had to teach him how to tell the truth. Why? Sin nature. And you know what it's like to be offended. One time I had a neighbor that offended me. And you know what? I didn't want to talk to him. I didn't want to see him. And I was a pastor, for goodness sake. I went to a grocery store, saw him in an aisle here in town. So you know what I did? Went to a different aisle. Pretended I was looking for something else. And then looking, oh, he's gone. He was in the aisle I needed. Of course. Probably ice cream. I don't know. But the bottom line is I was avoiding him. That's what offense does. When you offend God, there's a division there. So what happened? God made the first move. He was the one that was offended, and yet He made the first move to the point of actually becoming a human being. His name, Jesus Christ. And He came to this earth not to rule and reign as king there, to conquer Rome. Whoop-de-doo. That would have been nothing for God to conquer Rome. And instead, He decided to conquer sin, the greatest enemy of all. And instead of delivering one generation of people, He decided to deliver every man, woman, and child that ever had lived or ever would live by His death, burial, and resurrection, and His shed blood on the cross. And that's why I always look at people and I say this: the cross is the greatest bridge in the history of earth, because it bridges unholy people with a holy and a righteous God. When you believe in Jesus, it's as if you walk across that cross into a relationship with the God of the universe, the thing that you have always craved. And it's satisfying to be a part of His family, because He never disappoints, ever. And most of the time, we will share that story at the end of a service. And I'll tell you, we give people a chance to pray and accept Christ as their Savior. And honestly, the Lord has blessed it. If you truly believe in your heart of hearts that if people don't have Christ, they spend eternity in hell, it's going to change your behavior. It's going to change it. It has unified us as a church. Do you know how we started this church? We started this church in an asphalt company training room with 20 people, and several of them were older. Several of them were older. And I looked at it, and I was at the time 37. So I remember looking at them and I said, guys, are you guys willing to do church in a different way so that we can keep people out of hell? That's what I asked them to their face. And they basically, who's going to say no to that? Now, I'd rather do church my way and let people go to hell. Nobody's going to say that. I'm going to tell you, having that as your belief system, as your why, unifies you. Why is it that when we move out of a perfectly good building over to a high school and we have to pay $250,000 to transition to go portable, that's unbudgeted, and we have to pay rent and we have to pay a mortgage and we have to do all these other things, I'm going to tell you, did not get one negative report, not one negative comment, not one negative email. Everybody was like, let's do it. I'll tell you why. Because there's a world that doesn't know Christ, and without Him, they spend eternity in hell. And we have a saying at Park Valley. Our saying is this: hell is not an option for Haymarket. It's not an option. We're going to do everything within our power to try to reach people for Christ, whether people like it, don't like it, whatever. Our church isn't everybody's flavor. And it's like I always tell people, we're just doing our best. People come up and say, I don't like this. I say, we're just doing our best. We're not perfect. We're just trying, you know, to get people into heaven, you know. So would you bow your heads and close your eyes for just a second? Matter of fact, would everybody stand? I know this is a little awkward, but if everyone would stand, and I think we have some of our staff in here. What I want to do is, some of our folks, some of our staff, what I want to do at this time right now is this. If your senior pastor is with you, and you're with your senior pastor, I would like to ask, and you're like, dude, we don't do this or whatever, but I would like to ask if you wouldn't mind just laying your hands on your senior pastor's shoulder. And I want you guys to get around your pastor, and I want you, we're going to have prayer for your pastor. Now, if you're here and maybe you're not a senior pastor or whatever, I want to, hopefully, Lord willing, if we have some of our staff, if we could come and just find people and just lay our hands on the people that are alone, you know, and let's, if we need to get closer, we can get closer. But I believe that prayer is powerful. And I believe that the laying on of hands is powerful, you know, and so we want to, I remember Stephen, we were talking about that earlier, laying on of hands and how we gathered around you when you first came here. I just believe it's a powerful thing to do. And, you know, if we could somehow make that happen, I know there's just not enough bodies in the room, so nobody's being left out. It's just a person thing. But so let's just pray right now. Lord, this is the greatest calling in the world. It is the greatest calling in the world. To be able to be your servant, to be your minister is amazing. Father, I want to thank you for the people in this room right now. They have dedicated their lives. They've dedicated their whole lives, Lord, to preaching the gospel, teaching the gospel, loving people, pouring into people. And it is a battle. It is a struggle. We know that the enemy is powerful, but we also know that greater is he that is in us and he that is in the world. It is not even a contest between the God of the universe and the enemy. He is defeated. We know where he is headed. We know where he's going. We know that our salvation is eternal and that the promises that you give us will last forever. And that once we're a part of your family, we're always a part of your family. Because the gifts you give us, you do not take back. You say that in your Bible. You won't do it. And so, Father, it is not an accident. It is not a coincidence that the people that are in this room are in this room. It's not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence that I believe you've put your hand upon this conference. However many people are here, you've put your hand on this conference. I believe you're using this conference. I believe that people are being encouraged. I believe that people are being strengthened. I believe that people are getting excited about their future, about the fact that your hand of power and direction and blessing is upon their life and upon their ministry. I pray that they won't forget that. I thank you for the teams that you've brought into their life. God, I pray that their teams will support them and love them and encourage them and serve with them, Lord, in humility. And I pray that all of the churches that are represented in this conference, God, I pray that we will have your hand of blessing and power. I pray that the churches would grow. I pray that they would experience health. I pray, Father, that we would see a harvest. God, bring us a harvest to whatever area it is that we're serving. God, bring a bountiful harvest, I pray, of souls and of people that are growing strong in the faith around us. And Lord, again, I just pray for every servant of God in this room that you would hold them up, encourage them, strengthen them, and bless them in every way, shape, and form. Bless their marriage, bless their health, bless their children, bless their grandchildren, bless their churches. Father, we know you're going to do it. We believe you're going to do it, and we thank you in advance for doing it. In Jesus' name.